We have already explained that what Daniel is seeing in this vision, and he's being told, the entire chapter is the angel Gabriel speaking to him. And he's telling him what's going to happen. We are now past Alexander the Great. Remember, all of this is by hindsight. I assume that Daniel knew exactly what it means, because he was told before, and he's going to be told later, that all of this is concealed and until the future. At the future, you will be able to know what it meant by hindsight. All that he knows is that there are going to be tremendous upheavals, and Eretz Yisrael is going to be caught in the middle of these upheavals. Following the death of Alexander the Great, there will be the Malchut, the kingdom of the Negev, of the south, and the kingdom of the north, kingdom of the south of the Talmais, the kingdom of the north, Antiochus. Ulekeit Shanim Yitchabaru, we learned this puzzle already twice, Pasuk 6. Ulekeit Shanim, at the end of a number of years, Yitchabaru, they will come, be joined together in wedlock. In wedlock. That's how they're going to make a treaty. Ubat Melech HaNegev, the daughter of the king of the south, Tavo El Melech HaTzafon, will come to the king of the north. La'asot Meishadim, Rashi says Meishadim is from that which is the right. Tova HaYashar. I think, now that I say it, I believe that's how Rashi understands it. In Torah, there is a mitzvah that says Vasita HaTov VaHayashar Be'enei Hashem. HaTov, that which is good, and that which is right in the eyes of God. That's what you shall do. Now that's quite a broad statement. You should do that which is Tov and which is Yashar. Says the Gemara that Yashar means Pshara, compromise. You can't din, the strict expression of law is not necessarily always the way in which to resolve a dispute. There are times that it is necessary to make a compromise, pshara. So if yashar means pshara, so la'asot meisharim means to do that which involves compromise. And there's compromise being made between the king of the south and the king of the north. V'lo ta'atzor korach hazroa. However, and here we're going to need the Malbin. Here we're going to need the Malbin. You should have the Malbin in front of you. V'lo ta'atzor korach hazroa. The strength, the korach hazroa, the strength of the arm, will not be able to withhold. V'lo yamod uzroo. And the strength will not be able to remain in place. V'tinaten hi u'mivi'eha v'hayolda, she and those who bring her, and the ones who gave birth, the one who gave birth to her, which was her father, they will be given over into the hands of their enemy. U'machaziko ba'itim. Now, I want you to take a look at the Malbim. You have the Malbim in front of you. That's page Kuf Mem Gimel. All you have to look for is from last week. Yeah. Just one moment. It's off. Take a look at the Malbim on the other side of the page, that Kuf Mem Gimel. Four lines. So at the top he said that we're talking about the king of the south who's going to send his daughter, how do you, Berenice, to be married to the king of the north. You know what, let's read from the top of the page over there, in the Malbin, on the other side. V'oz herzir tehus et ishto harishona. He marries Berenice. And then he gets rid of her. Watch. Then Tehus is going to bring back his first wife, Bikasher lo botcha oz be'emunato. She no longer trusted him. He had sent away his first wife in order to marry Berenice. He gets rid of Berenice, and now he brings back his first wife, but she doesn't trust him anymore. V'gam ki yada, yada she knew, shal pi divrei habrit shebeinayim, the treaty that was made between them, tagia hamalucha leben Berenice. There had been an agreement that the son of Berenice is going to be the next king. So what did she do to her husband? Ishkita leba'ala son hamavet, she poisoned him. I have a feeling that in royal palaces, poison was in. I mean, in Shakespeare, aren't there a whole...
Yes.
And usually it's women that use poison.
Mm.
There wasn't a negative statement about women. In other words, men shoot, men chop with axes or knives. Women, you delicate, you know. Huh?
Italian?
Italia. Further. Laodice. Ved Bat Melech HaNegev Upino, the daughter of the king of the south, and her son, V'chol Anosher Shabo Itami Mitzrayim Haraga, she killed the daughter of the Laodice. What did we say last week? There's nothing like a woman scorned. All right. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. So therefore, she now kills not only her husband, but she kills the second wife, the daughter of the king of the south, and all who came with her, Ubino, and the son, Seleucus, Seravinus, Yashav Arkise Ubinos, her son. No, she had killed earlier the son of Berenice, and her son, Laodice's son, who is Seleucus Seravinus, Yeshev Arkise Amalucha, he is going to become the one who will sit on the throne. Velotatzor Korach Hazroa Rotzonoloma Shebat Melech HaNegev Lo Tuchal La'atzor Et HaKorach Shel Ha'ish Zeroa. The daughter of the king of the Negev is not going to be able to hold back the strength that is aligned against her. Mashebalo Hichricha B'Korach Hazroa. Her husband sends away his second wife. He sends away Berenice. She will not have the power to stand up against him. Though this is something that he's doing something that's wrong. It's not because it's right, but it's only because he has the strength. He forces her to be separated. I mean, it was not only a marriage. This was more than a marriage. It was a merger. It was a treaty. And the lotats or korach hazroa, she will not be able to withstand the power of the arm. The lo yamod. But everybody, you know what it always is? Everybody pays. Everybody pays in the end. The king of the north is going to pay with his life because he's killed by his first wife. The achakach lo yamod melech hatzafon. The king of the north will not be able to stand afterwards. Uzro'o and his strength. In other words, I think that nearly everybody here gets their just desserts. Everybody gets their just desserts. We'll have to see what's going to happen with Laodice. But Berenice is, she's killed by Laodice, and her son is killed. Laodice's son is the one who now becomes king. The king of the north, one of the Antiochuses, one, two, or three, will not be able to stand, and he's going to lose his life. The daughter of the king of the south will be given over to death. He umivieho, she and those who brought her, hasorim sheheviota, says the Malbim, the officers, the ministers who brought her, bahayolda, the one who raised her, hainu haomein, bahamigadelota, the one who brought her up, Shahayolah Ka'ab, as it says, Ashayolda Ladriel,
No need to know that. Umachazika beitim hayoed shelo shehechezikota batzatoli tod batzara.
The one who advised her, the one who gave her strength, is also going to fall. Everybody's going to fall. And then he takes us into the next pasuk, pasuk 7. Va'omad mineitzer shorosheha kano. There will arise. Mineitzer, neitzer always means a shoot. Neitzer mishorosheha. From her roots, there is going to rise kano, one who will be established. Says the Malbim, Oz molav v'mitzrayim talmai ayergetus. Achid Berenitza. Who was the king of Egypt at the time? Berenitza's brother. Shehu Netzer Shel Beit Aviha. He is a shoot that comes from the house of her father. For Amad Kano, he will stand on his platform, his base. Hainu Al Kan Malchut Aviv. He's going to be on the base of the kingdom of his father. Back into Pasuk Zion, V'yavo l'chayil, he's going to come with great might. V'yavo b'ma'oz melech hatzafon, he's going to come into the fortress of the king of the north. V'asopehen, and he is going to do in them v'hechazik, and he will be strong enough. There is somebody who's going to come and in a sense avenge her death. In other words, here again, at one point it's the king of the north who rises, now it's the king of the south who is going to rise again. Back into the Malvin. It is explained in history, when Berenice felt, she suspected that they are going to kill her, she fled from before her enemies, and they besieged her. The people of Aram, nations around, were awakened to come to her aid. Also her brother, who has now become king of the south, Ergetus, came with a great army to help her. But in the midst, as all of this was being done, she was killed. The kings of the north, and when we're talking about the kings of the north, we don't mean the house of Antiochus. We mean the kings around, all joined with the forces of the south against the king of the north in order to avenge her death. And that's why it says Sheboel Hachayil, he came with great strength. Hainu El Chayil Amei Hatzafon, against the army of the people of the north. Sheboel Ezratah, who came to help of Vaharag Ed Laditzov Ed Benah. Now who gets it at the end? Now the cycle is complete. The king of the north and his allies, the king of the south and his allies from the north, now kill Laditzah and her son. Vayavo, the Gambov, the Ma'oz Melech Hatzafon, he also comes into the fortress of the king of the north. Shelokach Miyad Selekus Severinus, he took from Selekus Severinus, the son of Antiochus, Teus, as Kol Eretz Tzenitzion Ad Hanahor Chidegel Ube Eretz Hanegev Kol Orei Hamitzar Ad Bavel. We're talking now at a point where the king of the north, the king of the south, has for all intents and purposes nearly vanquished the king of the north. The power now lies with the south. And in Pasuk Chet it says, and we're going to see right away, we're going to come to an important battle that in history is known as an important battle. V'gam Pasuk 8, V'gam Eloheihem, Im Nisichehem, Im Kleichem Datam, Kesef V'Zohav, Bashvi Yovim Mitzrayim. You see, every so often you come across over here a pasuk that's not clearly understood, and then the next pasuk is going to put everything back into perspective. In other words, if you were confused in the pasuk we were just now learning, who's doing what, comes pasuk 8 and tells us their gods, with all of their officers, in their most desirable objects, their silver, their gold, Bashvi Yavi Mitzrayim. He will bring it to Mitzrayim, to Egypt in captivity. So obviously we've been talking about a great victory of the south over the north.
And they're going to bring this all to the south. Bishav El Admato, and he will return. What? Yeah, Pasuk 8. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're right. I need you. Vuhu Shonim Yamod, and he's going to be king for a number of years. Minelach Hatzafon, over the king of the north. Into the Malbin, Pasuk 8. The Gam Elohehem im Nisicheim, Hainu Nisicheim are princes, Hainu Moshleim, they're rulers. Yavdiu Mimitzchayim, Vuhu Shonim Yamod, Shtei Shonim Amod, Amad Vahayolo, Menucha Mimelech Hatzafon.
This is very important. Now, the Malbin is learning, if it says years, he will stand in place. The minimum of years is two. In other words, after all the tremendous battles that have taken place in the north, and the king of the south comes back with all of this great wealth, tremendous victory over the north, the peace will remain for no more than 2 years.
Uba, Pasuk 9, Pasuk 10, okay, don't keep me on the straight and narrow. Yes?
There's not one Talmi. There are five or six. I'm not sure whether it, yes, the brother of Berenice. That's right, whether it's one, two, or three, I'm not certain. Now, the kings of the north are the Seleucid Empire, and their kings are called Antiochus.
Now, Prophet 9.
Who's going to come into the kingdom of the king of the south? Obviously the king of the north is going to come into the kingdom of the south. The Shav El Admato, and he's going to have to return to his own land. See the Malbim.
Uba Achakach Chaza Melech Hatzafon Seleikus Kalanikus Ve'eshiv Arzot Surya Techat Memshalto.
The next step is, again, the king of the north is going to begin to rebuild and regain his empire. He's going to conquer back the lands of the north. Ubobitsi Adir, he's going to come with a great fleet. Lidbosh Ha'iyim Shatachat Malchut HaNegev. The islands of the Mediterranean that are under the king of the south. And that's why it says Uba, and he will come. Who is the one that comes? Says the Malbim, Melech Hatzafon Yavo, the king of the north will come. Against who is going to come? The Malchut HaNegev, against the king of the Negev.
Avol Ruach Sa'ara Shavra Et Ha'aniyot V'Hamelech Nimnat Levado.
There was a terrible storm at sea, and therefore the great naval armada that was going against the south simply never made it. Therefore, Veshav Hayoshav El Admato, he returned.
Veshav El Admato, he returned Becherpa, in great shame.
Now, I want to point out something else over there. I believe that the lack of clarity in the Psukim is calculated. You can take any one of these Psukim and read it in a slightly different way. And it's all calculated. Because what we're talking about is, and we said this early on in the year, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi were the last of the prophets. Daniel lives at the same time as Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. This is the end of the 70 years of the Babylonian exile. Jews are already in the process of returning to Eretz Israel. What happens, I think the metaphor that we used then was, what happens when a bulb starts getting weak, huh? Flickers, on, off, it dims, until finally it goes out. During the period of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, the bulb, the light of prophecy, is dimming. Fact is that there's a Rashi. Rashi, at the beginning of Sefer, Zechariah says, I don't know how to explain Sefer Zechariah. It's too difficult to explain. And he apologizes in advance that he's going to try his best. Why is Zechariah so much more difficult than Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, or Yechezkel? Simple. Because since the lights of prophecy are dimming, even the prophet receives the images not in the sharp manner of prophets before. What is the metaphor that's used? For example, the Gemara says, what was the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and all other prophets? Moshe is the greatest of all prophets, and all prophets who come after him are not like Moshe. This is something that we have to believe. It's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Lokom bi Yisrael kemoshe od. It's beautiful. Lokom bi Yisrael kemoshe od. Navi, a prophet, umabit etmunato, can see the form of God. Says the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see ba'aspaklarya hami'ida. He was able to see with perfect clarity. The prophets afterwards never saw with the same kind of clarity that Moshe saw. And I therefore say that Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, who are at the end of the period of prophecy, they're not capable of seeing things with the same clarity that Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel before them saw. Their clarity is dimmed. Their message, therefore, is not as clear to us. Daniel wasn't even a prophet. He received messages in a dream. I believe, therefore, that the haziness of the psukim is an indication of precisely what's going on with Daniel. Prophecy has already just about come to an end. He's not even seeing things by way of prophecy. We still have the big question that we've asked, so what was the point in all of this being communicated to Daniel? What's the point of it all? All right, so one of the points that I've begun to express is the idea that it may be terribly important for Klal Yisrael to know that there are going to be all sorts of upheavals throughout history. And there may be periods of incessant and constant war. Klal Yisrael is going to be caught between all sorts of great forces in the world. And they're just caught in the middle. We've always been caught in the middle of all these great forces. And I think the words that I used were that the message of Daniel may be never despair. Because there is an end to it all. And the end to it all, after all the four great kingdoms that we heard about starting in chapter 2 and then in 6 and 7 and 8, the four kingdoms, will come the fifth. And the fifth kingdom is going to be Malchus Hashem with Klal Yisrael. There's an end. And the good guys are going to be around at the end. In other words, to paraphrase Leo DeRosha, you know, good guys end up last, but if you're the last ones in history after all the others have gone, then you've done very, very well for yourself. And that's exactly what Daniel is saying. But there's more. All right. So Pasuk Tet, he explains, as Ubabim Malchut HaNegev, the king of the south is going to come against the kingdom of the north, the Shovel Admato. Now you see, there is something strange in this Pasuk. Just to say he's going to come against him doesn't tell us what's going to happen, and all he says is he's going to return to his land. So he therefore interprets it as meaning an attempt is made at an attack against the south, but it never takes place because it is aborted. And therefore he says that this refers to an attempt to attack Mitzrayim from the sea, and which never takes place. Ubanov Yidgaru, Pasuk 10. Ubanov Yidgaru Vasfu Hamon Chayolim Rabin. Malbim is going to learn Banav means, who were we talking about in the Pasuk before? The Pasuk before, we were talking about the king of the north. The king of the north's children, Yidgaru, will be aroused or will be awakened. And by the way, Rashi says that also. Ubanav, listen, the Rashi is right on this side of the page. Ubanav shel melech hatzafon, Yidgaru. How do they translate Yidgaru in your English? Stir themselves. Oh, so, okay, fine. They will stir
themselves, the Osfu Hamon Chayalim Rabim, they are going to gather a mass of many soldiers, Ubo, Bo, Veshotav, Bova. He's going to come against him, and here the picture that is being painted is of great waves coming through against the king of the south. Ubobo Veshotav, and he will sweep through or flow through Vaavar and pass Vyashov, Vyidgoreh, Admo Uzo, and he will continue to be aroused and awakened against him until his fortress. See, let's do the Rashi first, and then the Malbim, because here he's going to be saying that it refers to a great and famous battle, one that you will have read about in your homework from 2 weeks ago. Upono, the sons of the king of the Tzafon Yidgaru, they are going to be stirred. Ubo, ubo, bo, kamo v'holeich haloch. Come, they will come. Beno shel melech ha-tzafon yavobo, the son of the king of the north will come. V'shotaf, and he will flow with strength for avar el eretz ha-neged, and he will come to the land of the Neged. V'yashov v'yidgore, he is going to go again and stir against the king of the Neged, Admo Uzo, until Ir Mivtzarav, his fortified cities. Now, the Malbim is going to be learning nearly the same Shad as Rashi, but he's going to translate it into the real historic terms. Says the Malbim, Ubonav shel melech ha-tzafon yidgaru, they are going to be stirred, v'asu hamon chayolim ravina, they are going to gather a great number of many soldiers, v'echot mehem meid b'milchama, one died in war, v'antiochus ha-gadol, Antiochus the Great, who was the brother that remained, who lacham, he waged war with Talmai Pili Petar. That's one of the Talmais. Now, what I find fascinating about this Malbim is, and I was expecting somebody to ask me the question, but I didn't want to stir anybody to ask me the question. Why what? That's nearly what I thought you were going to ask. I'll tell you exactly. The first word in Pasuk Yud is read one way and spelled another. It is read Ubanav plural, but it is written singular. According to the Malbim, it's beautiful because at the beginning of the war, two sons go out to battle, one is killed in battle, and only one remains to wage war. Isn't that gorgeous? What does it say in your translation? What's in Danish? It says son.
No,
your translation says son? Very good. That means your translation is translating the spelled word that we have. The spelling can be read Ubeno, but it is supposed to be read according to the Masorah. And by the way, I have not forgotten that I have to show you examples of the Masorah. How... Yeah, because you would ask the question, how do we know that everything that we have is... I don't think... That's absolutely correct. I don't forget good questions. So we will show the transmission. But here you see how the Kri and the Ktiv is absolutely magnificent. And I'm surprised that the Malbim didn't point it out. As soon as I learned this Malbim, it struck me that this explains the Kri and the Ktiv. Even though, and he continues it, you see, he does point things out, but he doesn't say it so clearly. Uvo, vo, she'echod mehem bo. One will come. In other words, you know what? He's beautiful. How come he's beautiful? The first part of the pasuk is plural, and then the pasuk switches to singular. Look at the first part of the pasuk. Ubanav. His sons, Yidgaru is a plural, they will be stirred, Vosfu, and they will gather, Hamon, Chayalim, Rabim, so now it should have gone on to say, and they will come. It doesn't say, and they will come, it says, Ubo, Yavo, one will come. So according to the
According to the Malbim, it's perfect why it switches from the from the plural to the singular.
No, but it's missing.
Wait, let's, you know what, in Daniel, let's just, if we get a few words that we understand, let's wait for the next problem. And he's going to, Shatap always means like a flood. He will flood and pass. The Kasherah Talmai, Kichazaku Mimenu, when Talmai saw that Talmai is the south, and he sees this major force coming from the north, and he saw that he is stronger, Shalach Malachim Lahashlimimau, Vasu Shalom Al Arba Chodashim. He sent messengers to different kings, and in a sense, they really made a truce or an armistice for 4 months. V'acharkach ro Antiochus shetalmai mitnakel alav v'ashalom haya b'nirma. And afterwards, Antiochus, the king of the north, saw that Talmai is really fooling him. He's plotting against him. V'ashalom, and the whole peace was b'nirma. It was all an act of trickery. Lak rak l'harviach zman, only so that Talmai should be able to gain time. Ulhachin eitzo gvura l'melchama, and to prepare counsel and strength for war. Bo olav shenis. Uvo vau. And now, why does it say uvo vau? Because the fact is, he describes exactly what the history books tell us about. Here is this great force coming from the north against the south. And it sort of, it stops, doesn't go all the way, because they had made some kind of an agreement. And then the battle continues after a hiatus of 4 months, and that's why Ubovo, he comes, and then it says in the pasuk, that's the first time he comes, and then V'yashov, he will return, Sheshov Shenit, Vaz Itzliach Ubad Nitzar Shel Gvul Mitzkayim, and then he got to Ma'uzo, his great fortress. The fortress, says the Malbim, is Rafiach. In your history notes, you'll see one of the great battles took place at Rafiach. We know exactly where Rafiach is. Rafiach, I'm just surprised that according to the Mefarshim over here, Rafiach was the... I don't know if it's considered part of Egypt, because it really wasn't ever part of Egypt. It may very well be it was an Egyptian fortress, and the moment whoever got Rafiach had an open way down to Mitzrayim. In other words, you had to conquer Rafiach, and Rafiach was one of the famous battles, and that's why it says V'yidgoreh ad Ma'uzo. V'tzonolom Hashem Melech HaNegev. In other words, they stirred themselves until they came to the fortress of the king of the south. Kisham nichata gevurato. That's where his strength ended. Kimoshi Yidbeah. Now, the question that you asked, Reva. The question that you asked, you should be able to answer it yourself. Her question was, if in the middle of the pasuk it switches to singular, because we said there were two brothers, two sons, and then only one remains, and therefore Uva, the one who comes, is singular, because only one of the children, one of the sons remains, and then what goes on afterwards? Then Reva asks, it switches to plural. Does it really? Does it really? Uh-huh. So the Cree, the way you read it is singular. It remains singular throughout. But it is written in a way that can be understood as a plural, because the fact is that he's coming with a mighty army, and he may be coming with all sorts of other allies. But you see, it maintains itself through the pasuk. V'yidgoreh is singular. That's because there's only one. Ad Ma'uzo, until they come to his great fortress, and the fortress is Rafiah. Now you can ask me why it's written with a hay and supposed to be read with a vav. So out of three in the pasuk, I only know two. I'm not sure about the third. Huh? It's not what? It's not feminine. Why should it be written with a hay? The truth is, anybody who's heard my shiurim over the last few years should be able to come up with some kind of an answer. I'm just not sure that it's true. You know, the feminine hay always represents weakness. Not because feminism equals weakness. Don't start out with me. I heard that chuckle from the other side of the room.
I think you should use that pause
button. It's because hay, and I had given a number of examples. It once gave a number of examples. It says by the in Parshat Bo, by Tfilin, it says, V'hoya la'ot, it should be a sign al yodicha. Ad yodicha. Yodicha usually is spelled yud, dalid, and a chaf sofit. Over there, yodicha is spelled yud, dalid, chaf, hey. Yud, dalid, chaf, hey. From which the Gemara learns, on what hand do you put tefillin? Yad kehe. The weaker hand. The hay represents that which is weak. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean weak in intelligence or weak in integrity. The hay, I mean, it could be, of course, there's maybe another reason. Hay is less than vav. Hay equals 5, vav equals 6. I mean, I'm making this up as I go along. And I will confuse you so much that you may even believe that what I'm saying is true. But hay always represents the weaker. Ma'uzo, for him it was a great fortress, but the great fortress of Rafiah did not withstand the invasion. Yes? It's all in a dream. It's all in a dream. All in a dream. He doesn't see it. There's no Gabriel in front of him. It's all in a dream. No, he fell physically because something is happening that frightens him. The Gemara says it about his friends that we learned about in the last chapter, that his friends fled. Who were his friends? Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. So the Gemara said that they were better than him because they were prophets and he was not a prophet. But he was better than them, that he was able to, in his mind's eye, see Gabriel standing before him, but they were not able to see it. Remember, a Navi or a dreamer sees only what God wants him to dream. Just because you're a Navi doesn't mean you see everything. So then the Gemara says, so why are they running? Why do Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi run if they haven't seen anything? So the Gemara answers, even though a person doesn't see it, but his neshama, they felt that something frightening was taking place around them. All right, further, let's go. Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'yitmarma, Melech HaNegev. The king of the south, Yitmarma, most probably means is bitter. How does your English?
Shall be moved
with
choler.
Shall be moved.
Choler is anger.
H-O-L-E-R.
Choler is anger.
Yeah? I never knew that. Rage, huh? Never knew that.
Embittered.
That's what I... V'yitmarmar melech ha-negev.
Huh?
What does it say down below?
Furious action.
Furious action. Okay, that's good. V'yitmarmar melech ha-negev. V'yotza v'nilcham imo. And he's going to go out and wage war with him. Remember, we're talking about now the king of the north has come down with his forces. They are in the Rafiach area. The king of the south is going to come out with great bitterness, and he's going to wage war with him in Melech HaTzofan with the king of the north. Veheemid Hamon Rav, and a great mass of people will be standing ready over there to do battle. The Nitan Hehamon Viato, the masses of the forces of the north will be given over into the hands of the king of the south. V'nisa Hehamon, and he will, the mass that is with the king of the south will be raised and uplifted. In a sense, they are going to be overwhelmed with great pride. V'ram levavo, and his heart is going to be full of conceit. He is going to bring down tens of thousands of the forces of the king of the north. But it's not going to be a source of strength for him. In other words, here at the Battle of Rafiach, there's going to be a tremendous victory to the king of the south. But that's not going to be the end of the story, because it's going to happen all over again, that the king of the north, I mean the upheavals that keep coming one after another. I imagine most probably if it would have taken place in Europe in the 15th or the 16th century, it would have been called the Hundred Years' War or the 200 Years' War. That's really what it was. And during all of this period of time, Klal Yisrael is caught. I mean, they're really innocent victims on the... I'm afraid to say it, you know. The wrong people, at the wrong place, at the wrong time. Except Klal Yisrael is the right people at the right place, but it's obviously the wrong time. Let's see the Malbim on this. The Itmarmer Melech HaNegev HaYadam Ma'alalim. Here is very fascinatingly. He's injecting the details of history into this. He says that the king of the Negev was a bad Ram Alalim VaOhev Tanugim. And he really loved pleasure. He wasn't made for war. He just enjoyed, you know, the classic Australian lying on a couch dropping grapes into his mouth. That's really what interested him more than anything else. When he saw that the enemy is in his within his boundaries, the battle is here. He was awakened with great bitterness, this color, this anger. The Yotzom in Ilchamimo and Melech HaSafon, he went out and he waited for the king of the north, the Hamid Hamon Rav, and he brought up a great mass of people, Neged Melech HaSafon, against the king of the north. The Natan Hamon Shel Melech HaSafon Biyadol, the masses of the king of the north were given in his hand. The Nisohe Hamon Shel Melech HaNeged, the masses, the great, after the great victory, they felt raised and uplifted, the Ram Levavo, and the heart became high. The Choshu, and they thought Shekfar Mitzchu Legamri, they thought they had completely been victorious over the king of the north. That's why they didn't pursue him until they destroyed him utterly. Because the king went back to his pleasures. V'lachein hagam shehamon shel melech haneged hipil ribaot mechel melech hatzofon. Even though the victory was a great victory, that the masses of the king of the south brought down tens of thousands of the king of the army of the north, bechol zeh lo yaoz, he did not become strengthened. Ki melech hatzofon hitgaber sheinit, the king of the north became strong again, kemo sheyit va'er, as he says in the next pasuk, v'shav melech hatzofon. You see, every so often The Pasuk will tell you who we are talking about. In Pasuk Yudbet, it didn't tell us who we were talking about. But now, Shav Melech HaTzafon, in 13, the king of the north is going to return, the Ha'emid Hamon, and he's going to gather a massive army, Rav Min HaRishon, even greater than the first. Ulekeitz Ha'itim Shonim Yavo Vo, and again, at the end of years, he's going to come, B'chayil gadol u'b'rechush rav, with a great army and with a lot of material, u'b'itim ha'heim rabim yamdu amelech ha'negev, and at that time many are going to stand up at the against the king of the Negev. We're talking about the king of the north is coming, and there are others, and here comes the something new enters into the picture, u'b'nei paritzei amcha, and people of your nation who have broken through the bounds, yenasu lahamid chazon, they are going to attempt to raise the vision, v'nichshalu, and they will fail. B'nei paritzei amcha, says Rashi over here, ra'iti b'shem Rav Sadia, I saw in the name of Rav Sadia going shezu paritzei. all of these battles? In our history, I think we're talking about battles that take place at least over a period of 100 years. And the battles keep coming fast and thick one after another. And now there's a new ingredient that comes in, and that is that Jews are becoming involved in this struggle. Up until now, they have been the innocent bystanders. They're no longer the innocent bystanders. The Yavo Melech HaTzafon, and the king of the north is going to come. V'yishpoch Solala. He's going to pour out a battery. You know what a Solala is? Yeah, what does it mean? No. What? Say this. Yes. What did the Romans do at Matsada? How did they get to the top of Matsada? The ramp is the solala. You pour out the sand, and therefore it becomes like a ramp or a ramp going up against the Yishpoch Solala. He is going. Huh? I didn't hear. Very not bad. A maslul. Or something that you are solel. It's all the same, right? In other words, because you create a road leading up Yishpoch Solala. He's going to pour out the Solala V'lochad Ir Mifzarot, and he will conquer cities of fortified cities whose ro'ot ha-negev, and the arms of the king of the south Lo Yamodu, will not stand before him. The Am Mivcharav, his chosen nation, are going to be part of that war, the Ein Koach Lamod, and they're not going to have the strength to stand up against them. We're talking now about the Greek forces of the north. The Greek forces of the north are going to take Eretz Yisrael. B'nei Paritzei Amcha have been mentioned, Am Mivcharav, his chosen people, they don't have the strength to stand, and Eretz Yisrael is now going to be mentioned for the first time in the next pasuk. V'yas haba elav kiritzono, the one who comes is going to do as his will, what he wishes to do. V'ein omed lefanav, there's nobody who can stand before him. V'yamod be'eretz hatzvi, he's going to stand, stop with his camp in Eretz HaTzvi. Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi. Now the real meaning of Eretz HaTzvi is, you may recall in Ezra and Nehemiah we had a word, Betzavi. Betzavi means something that one wishes, one wills, is desirable. Eretz HaTzvi means Eretz Yisrael is the desirable land. The Gemara, of course, gives a midrashic interpretation. Tzvi is a deer. She is a deer, and it seems like the deer's skin can be stretched. It's very stretchable and malleable. So it says Eretz Yisrael is Eretz HaTzvi. It looks like a Eretz Ketana, but it's Eretz Gedola. When it needs, Eretz Yisrael is able to stretch and embrace its children. The king of the north is going to stand in Eretz Yisrael. These are the Syrian forces of Antiochus that conquer Eretz Yisrael. The Chola Biyato, and he completed the conquest of all of Syria and of all of Eretz Yisrael. V'yosem panav, Pasuk Yud Zayin, V'yosem panav, the king of the north is going to move in the direction, he's going to point his face, Lavo b'tokev kol malchuto, with the strength of his entire kingdom, v'yisharim imo, and yisharim was used earlier to mean to make peace, and here also he's going to make peace with his enemies, v'asahi, will make peace with them, ubat hanashim, Yitain lo lahashchita, and the daughter of women, Yitain lo lahashchita, will let him, or will have no choice but to let him destroy her, velo tamod, and she will not, it will not stand, velo lo tihyeh, and it shall not be his. We have to learn the Rashi on this. Watch. Pasuk of Zion. Back the page before, by Yosan, Vyasen Panav, Melech HaTzafon, the king of the north, Lavoba Toga Tomachul Tov to come with the strength of his entire kingdom. Shel Melech Hanegev, in a sense, they have made peace. The Yisharim Imo in Melech Hanegev, he's made peace with the king of the Negev. Gamaleyan Yilachem Melech Hatzafon Ba'otam Hayamim. In other words, he's going to ultimately conquer them as well. He's going to conquer them as well. For Asa, he will succeed. And then Batan Hashem. Who's the Batan Hashem? Says Rashi, Zu Knesset Yisrael. This is the people Israel. Hayafa ban Hashem, the most beautiful of women. Yitzaveh Melech Hatzafon L'sar Tzva'ol HaShchita. The king of the north is going to command his commander-in-chief to destroy her. Va'omer Ani. Rashi says, I say, Shehu Antiochus HaRasha. This destruction by the north of the Yofa Banoshim after the conquest of Eretz Hatzvi, this is Antiochus, the evil king of Greece, Shegozak Zeros HaYisod, that made all sorts of decrees against Israel. V'tziva leFilippus Sar Tzva'o. He commanded that Philippus, his commander-in-chief, laharoge kol hakorei shemo Yehudi, anybody whose name is Yehudi. K'mo shekosuv b'sefer Yosefon, as it says in Yosefon, v'lo tamo, but he's not going to succeed. Atzatozot, this council of his, where he wants to destroy. No, you know what we're talking about? We are talking about an attempt at a final solution. An attempt at an absolute final solution. The first one who attempted it was, in a sense, Paro. Kol haben hayilod hayaura tashlichu. But here, Antiochus, HaRasha, is the one who decrees that his commander-in-chief should wipe out anybody who's called Yehudi. V'lo tihyeh, but it's not going to be his. He's not going to succeed. V'lo tihyeh bat hanashim, the daughter of the most beautiful daughter of women will not fall under the king of the north. Sha'amad Matisyo ben Yochanan uparak ulo me'al Yisrael. Matityahu ben Yochanan kohen gadol is the one who removed the yoke of the north from upon him. Here, in other words, in the middle of the, or toward the end already of the Greek Empire, because soon we're going to see Rome enter upon the scene. Toward the end of the Greek Empire, I have this feeling that the beginning of the end of the Greek Empire comes when they decide upon the final solution of the Jewish people. It's not the only one. The beginning of the end and the end of other major empires.
Spain.
Give me another one. What's the next one?
Germany.
No, it's doing all right. No, all right, now. But the Third Reich. What other empire?
Russia.
The British Empire. The British Empire. What are you talking about? The beginning of the Second World War? What are you talking about? Until after the Second World War, it was still sun never set. Right now, not only is the sun, now the great issue is, will Scotland remain part of the British Empire? In other words, not only has the British Empire lost everything from Hong Kong to New Guinea to...
Because the S-O-N can't rise.
To who?
Because the S-O-N can't rise.
Because the S-O-N can't rise?
I know.
We're talking about an empire that girdled the globe. What are you talking about? The British Empire. And now, I mean, it's coming down. It's most probably going to end up being... I mean, there's nobody from England here? Right. Most of us are from the colonies or from South Africa. All right. The colonies.
Commonwealth.
The Commonwealth. Oh, Canada, yes. Canada. No, but really, you have to understand what's happening over here. England was once one of the world's greatest empires. And now, I mean, it's gefallen sticker. The beginning of the end started, I must say, the beginning started most probably with Begin. In 1944, Begin declared war. His few hundred men, they declared war against the British Empire. Understand? They declared war. The fact is that India brought them down first, but the first one to have risen against the British Empire was Begin. In 47... Huh? No, I didn't postulate anything. No, I'm not. No. I'm just saying, take it for what it's worth. Listen, let's look at ourselves. The Russian Empire, the Communist Empire, the only dissidents, the only really known dissidents as a group that fought, the only were the Jews. There's no question about it, the Jews. So mighty empires fall over the issue of the Jews. I mean, this is not chauvinism. And this is what's happening over here. I mean, see what the Rashi says? The Rashi is frightening. Antiochus gave orders to kill everyone who's called a Jew. Now, I want to take you one step further. There are those who I want to leave you with the impression that the whole struggle of Hanukkah was a spiritual struggle. You're left with the impression that the whole thing was a spiritual struggle against idolatry, against this, against that. Rashi is saying a great deal more than that. Matthias Ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol stood up in order to defend Jewish lives. The terrible thing, of course, was that there were Jews who had joined the forces of Hellenist Greece. But Rashi, I mean, you can't get away from what Rashi is saying over here. By the way, there's another reason to the whole idea of looking at Hanukkah as a spiritual victory, so that Jewish armor and Jewish might and Jewish fighting is of secondary importance. As one of the books on Hanukkah is, let the military victory, let's leave that to the historians. That's not what's significant to us. What's important to us is the spiritual victory. All right, listen, I'm not afraid anymore. It's in Art Scroll Hanukkah. A number of pages, they say the military victory wasn't terribly important. What's important was the spiritual one, generals and battles. So I'm just saying. So I had always complained. In other words, because they say the whole idea of independence is insignificant and unimportant. Now you can see a whole mindset over here. It's worse. No, I wouldn't even call them Babli. I mean, don't get me wrong. I am a Art Scroll has done tremendous, tremendous work. By the way, I used, for the last number of months, I've been using their Gemaras. They're great. But I'm talking about a particular shita, an approach that comes through so clearly in Art Scroll Hanukkah, and you find it in other of their writings. Independence is not important, insignificant. Jewish might and the ability to fight is unimportant and insignificant. Everything is to be seen on a spiritual level. I don't deny the fact that there was a spiritual dimension to the struggle against Greece. No question about it. Greece really was saying either you become Greek idolaters, or, and that's really what Rashi means, when Rashi says, Kol HaKore Shimo Yehudi, look at the words of Rashi, it's an amazing Rashi. Whoever calls himself Yehudi, the Gemara in Megillah says on Mordechai, Ish Yehudi Hoyah v'Shushan HaBira. There was a Yehudi in Shushan HaBira. So what does it mean? There was only one Jew in Shushan HaBira? No! The Gemara says, Kol HaKofer v'Avodah Zorah, whoever rejects idolatry is called Yehudi. If one wanted to show that he has rejected completely idolatry, he would call, his name was Yehudi. Yehudi! By the way, I think they say, Bityo Bat Paro was also called Yehudit, because she rejected the idolatry of her father's house. Now, the words, as I keep, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to learn this Rashi with you, because as I read the Rashi, I see every word in the Rashi becomes more and more significant. He commanded to kill anybody who calls himself Yehudi. In other words, anybody who rejects idolatry is to be killed. So we're talking, first of all, about a final solution of the Jewish people. We're talking about what a threat to the spirit of Klal Yisrael. If there are no Jews left, if there's nobody called Yehudi, you understand, there's nothing to worry about our spiritual well-being. There's nobody around. There's nobody around. Which means that Matityahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, when he rises against Greece, he's rising against Greece in order to save Jewish lives. And the only way, and by the way, this you're capable of understanding it better now than we could have understood it in any other way. The point that I want to make is the following. The impression that you can be left with those other writings is independence was just not important. All that we wanted was, listen, you can occupy the land, we don't need independence, and you just let our yeshivas do their thing, and you know, permit our institutions to continue to function, and that will be fine. And that's the impression that you're left with. I mean, how many times have I heard in years past, what would have been real, what was so terrible when the British were here, you know? It's being totally divorced from history. Take a look at what's happening over here, over 200 years between the King of the North and the King of the South. It's never ending. It's never ending. There's no such thing as entering into an agreement. In this parak itself, there are going to be at least 3-4 agreements that are made between the King of the North and the King of the South that are not honored. They're broken, they're breached, and everybody involved in the agreement is killed or poisoned. There is no way to arrive at an accommodation with Greece over an enemy. The only way is to be independent. That's the whole point. And this is what I proved to you from Psukim in Ezra, where Ezra, in a long speech that appears in chapter 8 of Nehemiah, there's a long speech by Ezra. And as Ezra is speaking of the dedication ceremonies of the Beth HaMikdash, so you have Beth HaMikdash, you have Jews coming back to Eretz Yisrael, and after a long, long speech, he says, "Ubetzora gedola amachnu, we are in terrible straits. We are avodim. We are king. We are slaves. We are enslaved." In other words, somebody would tell you, when we have the Beth HaMikdash, then everything's going to be hunky dory. That's all we want. Beis HaMikdash. Who cares about independence? Who cares about armies? Not so. Ezra has Beis HaMikdash. Ezra has Karbanos. He has everything going for him. Only one thing he doesn't have. He doesn't have independence. And as long as there's no independence, you are simply not the master of your destiny. If you are dealing with an enemy that wants to put to death anybody, Asher Nikra Shkore Shemo Yehudi, who calls himself Yehudi, then there is only one option: complete and total defeat of the enemy. There's no other option. There's no in between. There is no in between. It has to be total military victory over the enemy, absolute and total defeat. And I'm beginning to think that may very well be one of the messages that is being transmitted to Daniel. You can give no quarter to Greece. Because all that will happen another year, 2 years, and by the way, the battle that the Hashmonaim had against Greece was not ended in 1 or 2 or 3 years. 25 to 30 years was the struggle between the Hashmonaim and Greece. It took 25 years after they entered into the Beth HaMikdash and after the miracle of the oil, until they finally destroyed Greece utterly. And I'm ready to go one step further. I challenge somebody outside of here to call me an apokoros. The whole point of the miracle of the Pach HaShemen was that heaven was telling them, "Boys, go ahead, I'm going to be with you. It was an indication that God is on their side. Go fight because you're going to be victorious. That's the point. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that there were people at the time who were saying, let's say kill him. Let's say kill him. And then there are others who said, you know, let's make some kind of an accommodation with Greece. Let's do something. Came the Nes Pach Hashemim and Hashemayim, an absolute clear miracle. And by the way, you know what? At first, I don't believe that the miracle was known to all of Israel. Who knew of the miracle? The Kohanim. Who were the ones who were running the war? Who rebelled against Greece? The Kohanim. And the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, Matis Yehu Bonav, are watching. 1-2 days have passed and it's still burning. They're sending us a message, Min HaShemayim. So what's the great message that they're sending, Min HaShemayim? The great message, Min HaShemayim, is that the Rebbe Hashem says, boys, go to it. Chazak ve'ematz. Hashem imcha gibar ha'chayil. Go ahead, but you're going to have to keep it going. You're going to have to keep fighting until you crush them utterly. There's going to be no other way. I think I convinced myself already that this is Pshat and Rashi, and I think it's Emes. Who? Oh, by the way, we're going to come to that. That's going to be right here in this chapter. The victory, it will last, according to the Rambam, and I throw the Rambam in together with the Rashi, because the Rambam says very festively at the beginning of the laws of Hanukkah that the Chashmonaim came in and they rededicated the temple. The Chosro HaMalchut LeYisrael Yeter Amatayim Shana, and kingdom, independence, returned to the Jewish people for more than 200 years. More than 200 years. A 200 year respite for Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. Boy, they can accomplish great things. But they're going to ruin it themselves, and that's going to be right here in the chapter. Yes? Yes? Oh, so that's what I'm saying. I'm saying Kol HaKorei Shemo Yehudi, because there were Jews who had adopted Hellenist practices. But then there were others who said, no. I remain faithful to the God of Israel. Kol HaKorei Shemo Yehudi means one who remains faithful. All right. Now, we're going to have a next Wednesday. What did we decide last week? I decided no class. I think it's going to be very close to Yom Tov, and there's so much going on, and I got so much going on in my life. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I'm going to miss you. I want you to have, first of all, a Chag Sameach for Yom Yerushalayim Friday, Thursday night and Friday. If you want to know who to vote for, you can come tonight to Heichal Shlomo. Or if you know who to vote for, then you don't have to come. Do whatever you want. All right? And then tomorrow night is the Bet Arad dinner. If you want to celebrate Yom Yerushalayim on Haratzofim, there's the Bet Arad dinner. And I don't know, we've got so much going on. You're coming to the Bet Arad dinner. All right. So much going on. And I want you to wish you also for Shavuos Chag Sameach, and we'll see you afterwards. Gesundheit, all of you.